Well, let's round out the show with a conversation about education, top of mind to say the least, here on a day where New York City schools, they pushed it back, but they are headed toward in-person learning, at least on a hybrid basis. But underneath all of this is technology, and we want to understand how it all works. Lucky to have with us Nick Gaeta. He is president of Lexia Learning. Join us on the phone from Boston. All right, Nick, very timely conversation here. First of all, help us understand what Lexia Learning does so we have a good foundation for this conversation.
Yeah, good afternoon, Jason, and thanks so much for having me on. So what Lexia Learning does and has done for the past 35 years is develop technology to support students and educators in the classroom, as well as outside of the classroom when they're working in a remote environment.
So I'll just do anecdotally. I have a six-year-old. She's going to go into first grade. So if she was going to be using your programs, et cetera, how would she do that?
Sure. So she would use our programs to really practice and master her foundational literacy skills. So a student working in the classroom or at home would be presented with a very personalized path through that learning process, constantly adjusting to the needs of the individual student based upon the strengths and weaknesses that they show as they're working in the program. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, all of the information about that student is delivered back to the teacher in real time so they understand the instructional needs of every single student.
So, Nick, I'm going to be a little cynical here, and I don't know whether Alex will share my view of this or not, but I have teenagers. And they, like everybody else, were sort of thrown into this remote learning world back in the spring. And to use a very technical term, I think for them and for lots and lots of people across the country, it was kind of a mess in many ways. And that's no one's fault because it was triage, to say the least. But what, as you understand this business so much better than we do, what did we learn from the spring overall across this modality, this new modality of learning?
Yeah, no, I think you're right in saying that it was very challenging. I mean, the speed with which schools closed and students and teachers and families had to adjust was really, really quick. And I think created a lot of challenges across the board. If you have little kids at home, you understand what that meant in terms of supporting them as they were going online to learn. I think what we learned was it's not as easy as making sure a student can log online, although for a significant number of students in the country, they don't have access
right.
to technology, they mm-hmm. don't have access to the internet, and they don't have a learning guardian at home who can help them, especially in those young grades. So I think what we learned is the importance not just of the infrastructure, but also to make sure that there is someone who can help those young learners through the learning process.
So what, and this is anecdotally, obviously, my daughter goes to public school in New York. So we got like the rundown yesterday of the idea that they're going to go for, right? And sort of what's going to be required of them when they're online. How flexible, it seems like your programs have some kind of AI, right? Where they can kind of like learn her as she's learning. But how do you do that when there's also like a school curriculum involved that's going to have their own thing and their own process?
Sure. So one of the things we like to talk about is the combination of AI and HI. And obviously, we all know what AI means. HI is human intelligence. We've always believed that technology does not replace the teacher or the educator. What it does is give them an incredibly valuable platform to understand the needs of the students that are working so hard, whether they are remote or in the classroom. If you think about an individual teacher looking out in that classroom of 25 students and then you move that online, it's just a real challenge for teachers. And without technology and without the ability to deliver that kind of data to the teacher, they're in the dark. They can no longer walk around the school classroom and understand what the needs of those students are. And so without technology, they have a very hard time of understanding how to meet those students where they are.
We're talking with Nick Gaeta. He is the president of Lexia Learning. He's joining us from Boston. We're going to continue this conversation in just a minute and round out the show with this, because I know I speak for myself, and I believe I speak for my co-host, Alex Steele. We've got more questions about this because we are talking about this around our respective dinner tables all the time with our kids, with our friends, and this is one of the most important things that we have to figure out, not to make too big of a deal of it, as a society. Like, if we're going to get back to whatever feels like some semblance of normal, Alex, we got to figure this out.
Yeah, and I think also sort of the importance of how to get to the kids that don't have
yes.
the ability to have access to education. I have a friend who's a public school teacher deep in Brooklyn, and that is what she is most afraid of. I mean, she doesn't have technical capabilities, and also she's then responsible for these other kids that don't either.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So let's get back to our conversation with Nick Gaeta, president of Lexia Learning, joining us on the phone from Boston. So, Nick, we were pelting you with questions because clearly we're very interested in this topic. You know, one of the things that I know we want to talk about is something that Alex was talking about very eloquently there at the end of the first part of our conversation, which is just this access question. And, you know, so much of this does rely on technology being in the right hands and folks being able to use them and creating a really good and proper learning environment. How do we get there on this?
Yeah, I think we have to be flexible. And I think we have to make sure that wherever there are opportunities for learning, that we enable that. As a company, you know, we have worked very hard over a number of years to make sure that we can provide access to our programs on the broadest array of devices that we see being used in schools and now we see being used in home as students are moving back and forth. And so it is a challenge that we have to all address as a country. I think some of that is actually being addressed at the federal level, but in our local communities and our schools, it's something that we're going to continue to focus on. And for us, at Lexia, which is a Rosetta Stone company, what we continue to do is think about how to lower the bar in terms of access to our products.
So how do you do that? Can you give me some concrete examples of how you would go into an underserved community to find a household that wouldn't have any devices and help them out?
Yeah, so it's not so much going into households and helping those individual households out. It's making sure that we're working with the schools to understand how they're supporting their students. We've always tried to make sure that our programs work on the again, lowest level devices and the lowest level bandwidth so that access is available to most students. We know that if students don't work on those foundational skills, and we see it during the summer, it's what we call the summer slide, that there's a learning gap that is created. But we also know that based on our research, we can close that learning gap. We've shown that we can close that learning gap with students working in our programs and educators looking at the data in a small time frame. So it's really collaboration with school systems and educators and now parents as well.
So, Nick, you know, one of the things we've talked a lot about at our house, and I can't speak for Alex's, but I know that lots of our friends have as well, is this notion of the hybrid model, you know, where you've got some students in the classroom, some kids learning remotely, you know, sort of overlaying my own experience of being in a conference room when some people are on the video conference. Like, it's not the same in many ways. How do you recommend students and teachers and educators and administrators sort of think about that, this potential hybrid world that we're living in?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've thought about that again for the last 35 years.
Yeah.
What does technology do really well? And where does technology not actually address the needs of the student? And that's something that the teacher needs to do. And so we've been very careful to think about using technology where technology is the right solution and not trying to mimic the role of the teacher. That's always been our philosophy.
So this might be an unfair question to ask you, but I'm just curious, in talking to schools and teachers, like, what do you think school is going to look like this year? Like, realistically,
Yeah, I think you hit upon it. And you said you were seeing that in Brooklyn, and I think we're seeing that across the country, that that hybrid model is what we're going to be facing. And that creates, you know, challenges for teachers and students and parents. And it's going to be a very fluid model.
And do you think, let me just interrupt for 1 second, do you think it's also going to be the case where you'll start hybrid and then, you know, you'll have a little shutdown for 2 weeks and go fully remote and then go back to hybrid and fully remote? Like, are we in the world where education for little kids and even for high schoolers, for like Jason's kids, have to be that flexible?
Yes, I think that is exactly right. I think that's what we're going to be seeing this fall. And the good part about technology is it actually can follow that student and follow that teacher, whether they're in the classroom or remote.
And so how much do you worry, Nick, about the long-term implications of this? You know, that there's going to be a sort of mini generation, a little cohort that is just, they're going to be a little bit behind, or they're not going to be able to grasp certain concepts depending on how old they are in this. Is that something that we're just going to have to deal with as a society?
Well, I think schools are doing a good job of identifying the students who need the most support, mm-hmm. you know, those fragile student populations, whether they're emerging bilinguals or English language learners or students who need special services, and prioritizing them in terms of when they're in the classroom. As we said, it's going to be a very flexible environment, but it's not new.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of students in this country are non-proficient readers. And that was before the pandemic and school closures.
Is that what you think it's going to be? It's going to be reading that's going to suffer the most?
I think reading is the foundation of all learning. If you look at how curriculum is delivered to students, about 85% of curriculum is delivered through text. So if you're not a proficient reader, you're going to struggle in all subject areas. And so you have to get that foundation in place in order for students to accelerate their learning in any subject or area.
And so who has to step up here, Nick? I mean, is this the federal government? Is it local governments? Is it the private sector that even outside of ed tech that needs to be investing more heavily here? What are the potential solutions?
Yeah, I think it's across the board. I think everybody needs to step up and step up in a collaborative way. I will say that the one thing that is coming out of, I think, this pandemic, and I heard it in your voices, is an understanding of the value of the teacher and the school that maybe was overlooked before.
You know, apparently my friend who's a teacher was a little offended when I was like, oh, my God, I never knew how hard your job was. But I really never knew how hard her job was.
Yeah, no, I think it's so true. And I don't think we ever thought about teachers as essentially frontline workers and essential workers, even though we should have.
It's such a good point.
So anyway, thank you so much for such a thoughtful conversation. Nick Gaeta, president of Lexia Learning, joining us on the phone from Boston. And yeah, maybe our eyes have been opened to some extent, Alex, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I just think about funding for schools and getting help from the federal government and kind of how this winds up playing out in the next couple of decades, to be honest with you, and like how you get those lost children back.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and, you know, we talk about the K-shaped recovery, and is this something, and we talked about this yesterday, where if you can afford it, you're going to be able to hire tutors, you're going to be able to create a pod, you're going to be able to do all these different things. And you have a group of kids that just don't have those resources available.
And then what happens, like if school, he was saying that, you know, you go into schools and you work with the schools to help the kids most in need. What happens if the schools have lost the kids?
Right.
Because
exactly.
They don't have any way of contacting them.
Whew, heavy. Yeah. But we continue to raise the questions, hopefully help solve some problems. It's been a good day. Looking forward to tomorrow. For Alex Steele, the rest of the Bloomberg Business Week team, looking forward to seeing you tomorrow here on Bloomberg Business Week. Have a good evening, everyone.